It's one-on-one. I'm Charles Woolforth, here for a weekly coffeehouse conversation. I've got somebody really interesting to talk to for the next half hour. Buzz Schwall is a carpenter who builds sets at the PAC and is backstage making sure the shows work. He's also made puppets and dramatized opera with puppets and has been to Europe to learn about how they do it there. Apparently there's a lot more puppetry going on in Europe than here. And then a lot of other interesting artistic stuff in the community. And so just a fascinating person. And I'm really, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I'm glad to hear I'm a fascinating person.
Yes. Well, at least that was my impression as we talked, right? You seem pretty fascinating. So tell me how you got interested in doing puppets. People think of puppets as being like, you know, hand puppets and kid stuff. But you're talking about like big puppets and serious productions, right?
Yeah. I was building sets for the Anchorage Opera and a lot of the other small theaters. And at 50, the abuse of carpentry and construction got to me. So I walked away from that, and a friend of mine, Brian Hutton, had just written a play. And we said, well, why don't we do it in puppets? So we did. We built a small puppet theater and built a bunch of puppets and did a production. And people liked it a lot. We did it at Cyrano's back when Cyrano's had the movie house.
We did it in
that space. And a couple of months later, I found an opportunity to go to Prague.
But let me stop you just for a second. So when you're doing like a puppet show for adults, I mean, these aren't little hand puppets. They're
marionettes.
They're bigger, right?
Well, the ones we, that first show weren't that big. They were maybe a foot tall.
Mm-hmm. And then actors are sort of like behind a screen or something, mm-hmm. or are you people doing different voices?
Right. They had Ben Brown and mm-hmm. Jennifer. Anyway, a bunch of them, they would do the puppets, and mm-hmm. we had built a theater that has a back wall they could stand behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got lighting and set up and got sound effects and this sort of thing. Just like a regular theater production, it was just with puppets.
Huh. Cool. Okay. So then you sort of decided you enjoyed that enough you wanted to do something else with it?
Well, the opportunity went to go to Prague. I went to Prague, and I had at that point, at 50, I'd never actually seen a puppet show. Mm-hmm. I'd seen Howdy Doody and that kind of thing, Kukla Fanali. But over there, I mean, we just went to see Don Giovanni, a full three-hour opera with puppets that were about 18 to 24 inches tall. And it was not for kids. It was adults were dressed to the tines and drinking champagne and the whole bit.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, okay. So I came back from Prague, and we started doing more and more things. Then the Rasmussen Foundation gave us...
Well, how did you figure out to go to Prague?
I went online looking for puppet workshops. And
oh, really?
This one came up, and you had to send an application. Uh-huh. You know, you had to have a certain amount of experience.
And so what did they teach you there? I mean, what was the workshop like?
Well, first, how do you design a puppet? Because like in any engineering, you know, you design, well, what do you want it to do? And mm-hmm. then you work from that point. And they showed us how to do that design, then do the drawings, then how to do the carving. Got my first carving chisels there. And then took you through the whole thing of the carving, then the painting, then the wardrobing.
So carving like the facial features of the puppet?
Well, the whole thing, yeah. The whole,
wow.
Mine, the whole body, it's not just rags inside. I carve the whole body with joints. Wow. And
Had you been into carving before that, or sculpture, or anything like that? Wow.
I probably had done a little, you know, whittling from time to time, but mm-hmm. this just sort of gave me a plan on how to do it, you know.
Kind of a leap from carpentry to wood carving, though.
Yeah, it was. but it's still in wood, and I still have a huge affection for wood.
Yeah.
And we did. Then, like I say, the Rasmussen Foundation gave us a grant to do Don Giovanni when the Anchorage Opera was doing Don Giovanni. So on their dark nights, we did it in puppets. Our version was 45 minutes instead of the 3 hours. But
Are there singers then, or just a record, or no, a recording?
We actually got a 1950s version of it where these two particular singers were big at the time. That's all they did was do Don Giovanni. One would do Don Giovanni, the other would do Leporello, back and forth.
Uh-huh.
So we got theirs, and a friend of ours, Ingvild van Gutha, so she's just a uh-huh. wonderful musician, did the sound thing and added in special effects. And so we had we would perform to the recorded music.
So I'm just trying to picture it, and this is in a large theater.
This is in the Discovery Theater, right?
So how do you, well, are you up on a catwalk or something?
Well, no, I have an actual puppet theater that got built. It's 8 feet by tall by 10 feet wide, and it has the proscenium and it has the curtain. So that was put mm-hmm. on the opera set. Uh-huh. So you saw the big opera set, and then you saw our theater, and then the puppets were on that. Uh-huh.
So the puppets must be fairly large for people to be able to see them in the auditorium.
They're 18 inches, foot and a half to 18 inches, yeah.
What about, I mean, is there a lot of practice in learning how to control them so that they look natural?
Yeah. Yeah, we spent a lot of time rehearsing with them, yeah. And the Czech rod puppets are a little bit easier than the full string marionettes.
In the
Czech version, there's a metal rod that goes through their body that goes up to the manipulation device, and that gives you a steady thing. On the regular string marionettes, there's no...
It's all loose.
It's all loose, right. So you have a different feel for it.
Uh-huh.
Like I say, we took this... These puppets got invited to go to Europe.
Oh, really?
To
wow.
do,
so after you'd done Giovanni in Anchorage, then you took it back to Europe.
I was invited. They had a Mozart's 250th birthday. Uh-huh. So they had seen my stuff on the web mm-hmm. and got in touch with me and asked me to come there. And I went to their theater, and their theater is the size of the Sydney Lawrence, perhaps.
Oh, wow.
And they do work from a catwalk above with, you know, 30-foot-long strings.
Is that a bit intimidating?
Wow, that is hard. That is, I mean, your eye-hand dexterity at 30 feet is
way different.
It could
be even hard to see what the puppet is doing, I would think.
Right.
Well, was it intimidating in terms of going from, I mean, here, if you do puppets, you're the first guy to do it. If you don't do it that well, nobody's going to notice, right?
Exactly. That was their job. They performed 5 days a week they had a repertory of puppet shows that were there at the museum.
I see. And what kind of people would come to those shows? I mean, what is it, just a mainstream part of culture there?
Yeah. I mean, they have, during intermission, people go out and they have champagne and, you know, truffles and just like you would any other kind of, and it's not kids, it's mostly adults. Unless it is, it's specifically a kids show.
So now you've worked quite a bit in theater, and we talk about more a little bit later. So you have been around actors a lot and around dramatic performances. What is the advantage of doing it with puppets, right? I mean, you could just get actors to do something. What makes it different, or what makes it...
I don't know if there's any real advantage to it.
what's special about it, or what...
Well, for me, the designing and building the puppets and having them actually be able to do the performance, you know, and it's a whole spectrum of stuff, from doing the drawings, the conceptual drawings, uh-huh. and the technical, and doing the carvings, da da da. So that whole thing is what is intriguing to me.
So you almost get to design your own actor, and
right.
you know, be God.
Yeah, exactly. But the puppeteer is an actor who is living through that puppet. And when you're actually manipulating a puppet, if you're doing it well, there's an energy that's pretty mystical. Because, I mean, we've done Pagliacci. I don't know if you know the opera. But the play within the play, at the end, when she's dying, I mean, I've actually had people sitting there crying, you know, and they're just watching this puppet. So, you know, that kind of thing can happen.
Yeah.
And it gets me going when I actually see, oh, I am connecting with these people because I have connected so well with that puppet.
Well, do you feel like the emotion is going through you as a puppet performer the same way as it would maybe for an actor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, my body is moving behind this just the same as his is moving. And I'm singing with him, trying to feel what he's feeling or should be feeling, but we're on a block of wood.
But I guess you can... You could be whoever you want then. You don't have to be the male character. You don't have to be an adult.
We cross all the time. Uh-huh. Yeah. That part is a whole nother fun thing to do backstage. You know,
take on different personality.
Because as you're moving a puppet across the stage, you can't be walking around people. Mm. So we end up passing the puppet from person to person.
Oh, my gosh.
If you're standing there and you're holding that puppet, you give me yours, I give you mine, and you hand it to the next person down. So those are the kind of things you have to practice.
I guess when you're blocking your scene, you want to keep it as simple as possible, huh?
Yeah.
So you don't have to do that too many times. Mm-hmm. So when you're building these puppets, is the facial expression or the emotion that is on the face of the puppet something that you're thinking about? Or is it like, you know, in the course of a play, an actor would have many different facial expressions. Mm-hmm. You're trying to have it kind of neutral, or are you trying to hit a certain feeling that they're projecting?
Yeah, that's interesting. I do drawings of what I want them to look like, and that just sort of goes onto the into the carving, and that's just sort of so you it is because they're going to have that face regardless.
Right. So they're not going to change. Like for they can't be crying because it might be a happy scene. Right.
Yeah. So that's just part of the how they end up having that particular emotional look. It just happens within the process of making them.
So you went back to Czechoslovakia to perform your stuff at the museum there.
And no, this was in Germany.
Oh, in Germany.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We didn't perform. They just wanted the puppets in the museum.
Oh, I see.
They went to that museum, then another museum in northern Germany. For the summer. They went on tour.
You get to go along?
No. I got to go for the opening night, but yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they invited me there and then actually did workshops in Munich while I was there. So.
And then what other things have you done with it since then?
Well, after that, I went to Afghanistan.
Oh my God, really?
A friend of mine had put together an organization to build girls' schools in Afghanistan. This was in 2003, I think April of 2003 is when it went, when we were invading Iraq. But
So you're going to go to a war zone with your puppets.
I took a bunch of puppets there, and we hooked up into the Northern Territory where we were building girls' schools with the orphanages up there. And I would get with the nurses or I'm not sure exactly what their titles were, but the women who ran the orphanages. And they're great sewers. I mean, this shirt was... hand sewn in Afghanistan.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. But they made little costumes, and we did performances at a festival they had. And then ended up having to go down to Kabul because I got robbed. And I hooked up with this group. It's called the Mobile Mini Circus for Children, and it's this Dutch guy who. Put together some money to get with the orphanages and teach kids things like stilt walking and juggling and they made big elephant, and they had part of their thing was teaching hygiene and with the elephant because he lost his tusks because he didn't brush his teeth.
Oh wow!
But then they go into little villages all over that area doing these performances.
And are these Afghanistan people from Afghanistan?
Yeah, these kids. These are orphans. Wow. These are kids that live in the orphanages.
Developed these shows? Wow.
Right. It's a wonderful, it's the Mobile Mini Circus for Children in Afghanistan. Mm. Check it out. They just do wonderful stuff.
Wow. So you just sort of ran into them by serendipity.
Right. They was actually, his housing was in the hotel that I was staying in when I was making my little transition.
So did you get involved in that then too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a couple of shows with him. Then I left half a dozen
puppets. Let me ask you first though, how did you get to Afghanistan in the first place? It's not the first place I would think about going.
Well, no, Nate York is the guy that started Solstice International. Mm-hmm. He had just come back from Bosnia, where he'd been working with the UN, distributing stuff to kids. And he said, hey, I got this opportunity. He says, you want to go? And I was available, and I had extra cash, and says, yeah, let's go, let's do it.
Wow.
And it was an intense experience. But the kids were, I found this one little kid, and apparently he really liked puppets. He had a dozen little hand puppets.
Oh, wow.
And when he saw me with my puppets, I was like, rock.
Oh, wow.
So we hung out a lot together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Buzz Schwall today on One-on-One. My name is Charles Wolforth. And Buzz has done these amazing puppets that he built and does in adult shows and kids shows, and has taken, to Europe and Afghanistan, and also works at the Performing Arts Center setting up shows and working as a carpenter. And so You were saying earlier you came to Alaska essentially to work at the hostel.
Right, right.
And I'm always interested in people's stories, how one thing leads to the next, it leads to the next. Somehow you get from there to doing puppets in Afghanistan.
That's interesting. I don't know.
Okay, so you're a carpenter, you're a wood butcher or whatever they call them, you know, but you got into this artistic thing because people needed carpentry skills to put up sets, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, I was working with the youth hostel in Seattle, and the youth hostel here asked me to come up for the summer, do an assistant manager, and I just never left. I left that job, and I went out to Prince William Sound, did some, with the fisheries, hatcheries out there, and then was doing scenery at Cyrano's, and one of the actor's roommate was the technical director for the opera, and he said they need a carpenter.
Oh, there you go.
And I said, okay, cool. Uh-huh. And that's actually how I'd never been to an opera before either.
Wow.
And then I started learning opera, and that's just fascinating.
Are you an opera lover now?
There are some operas I love.
But not all. Okay.
Yeah, I won't give it that. But we did, it was great because you build the scenery, then you learn about the opera, mm-hmm. and you were backstage doing the opera, so you had to know what was going on. So that was that trickled down to when I was doing the puppets. Well, I know these operas, why not I don't do them?
Right. Well, and that must be an interesting creative challenge, even though you might not be a trained artist, but you're creating something that is an artistic piece using your carpentry skills. And, I mean, is there sort of interpretation and sort of creativity in that whole process, or?
Well, yeah, when you're, for a lot of the companies around, I do the design too. Mm-hmm. So there is that creative process where, oh, this is what we need to happen. How can we have this happen? Me building it. Mm-hmm. So there was that aspect for sure.
And so then you start moving more and more from just carpentry, helping build houses, into carpentry of doing shows and putting things together. And then you start being invited to be backstage when the show is going on to help with that kind of work.
Right, right. It just sort of evolves and the opportunities, and it is, the opportunities you go with them.
Yeah. And, well, I'm really interested in, everybody's been to shows at the Performing Arts Center, and, the backstage part is invisible to you, but obviously somebody's moving stuff around and building it. So there must be a crew of people back there in the dark who are getting ready to run on stage and move the scenery and even build the scenery when the show starts.
Sure. Well, so you have your costumers, you have costume changers, because when the person comes off stage, they need to take off mm-hmm. costumes. You have that going on backstage. Mm-hmm. You have the lighting, you have the sound guys. The sound guys tweaking those microphones all the time. You have the fly rail, all that scenery that's going up and down. You've got, sometimes four or five guys on the fly rail pulling scenery up and down.
Uh-huh.
And
it's all got to happen like clockwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a fun, exciting thing to be involved in?
That's really the most worthwhile part of the whole process is doing the shows. Uh-huh. I mean, that's a good show. It's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Spam-a-Lot came up.
Oh, yeah.
You're backstage with those goofy people. They're always
a lot of humor
they're
going
always
on.
Up. There's no such thing as a relaxed, performer.
Uh-huh.
So you have that you're dealing with all the time.
And you're making a living, too. It's not like community theater where you're a volunteer.
Exactly.
You're
yeah.
a union member, and you're getting mm-hmm. paid. So these big Broadway shows that come in with a huge setup, mm-hmm. That must be quite a challenge and maybe pretty interesting. And the stuff shows up on trucks or something? Or?
Right, yeah. Typically, the Broadway shows come up. We go in at 8 in the morning and unload the trucks and put up the show. And then we have a show that night.
And so everything has to go perfectly.
And these guys, every bolt has the wrench for that. It's all color-coded. A goes to B, color da-da-da-da-da.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you're amazed at how quickly, because they bring in their own lightings, their own big trusses, take them up, uh-huh. all the lighting is set. So that's most shows. Some shows, like we're saying, when Mantle La Mancha came up, they had a month they loaded in and built the set.
Because they're building it from scratch.
Well, no, the set was already built
down,
and they shipped it up, but it had never been put together.
Oh, I see. So we were the first stop on the tour.
We were the first stop on the tour. Right. So, yeah, we built it, they ran it, people came up, they knew the choreography, how's it going to work on this set, how's the music sound, da 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 da. And then they did a month, about two week run, I think, with it then.
And so they have a pretty substantial technical crew they bring along, and then you're sort of trying to fit into that team and do what they tell you to do?
Right, 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 right. They hire you from the head down. You just do what you're told.
But, and what are the sort of the biggest ones that you've been involved in, or the most complicated ones?
Well, certainly Man of La Mancha was, and Lion King.
Oh, you know,
that was another one that came up. They actually had to retrofit the Atwood Theater to accommodate that because of certain things. But that was another one of those 2 week setups, and then I think they had a month run here, something like that.
Yeah. But you can't make your living just from being a stagehand. There's other stuff you do around town, but you try to keep it as artistic as you can, or whatever comes along.
I like the ones that pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I can say my friend Duke Russell, he sometimes gets commercials that come in, and that's a nice paying work, but you do it for a week or so. The Whales movie was up here.
Oh, really?
I worked on that for 3 months.
Oh, nice.
So that was a nice
project. So, like, you're turning I guess they worked in the library at the West High School. You're turning that into something else, or you're building something that looks like...
Right, right.
Which I've never understood. Why don't they just have a studio somewhere where they just do that? But
well, they do. They do. You know, that's one of the things we don't have is what they call a sound studio.
So you have to build it from scratch every time.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a place up on 46 and C. I think we had a warehouse. They built the president's office in there.
Oh, really?
And the ship, the icebreaker in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was built in there, and it was smaller than this room.
Wow. Was that interesting? Like building that kind of set that's going to be seen really close up, as opposed to what you usually see that's seen from far away.
Well, in that particular thing, I was an electrician.
Oh, right.
I didn't do any of the carpentry,
mm-hmm.
but the sets that I saw, I mean, they had incredibly specific drawings. I mean, when you walked into that boat, it looked like you were in a real boat.
But it's still made out of plywood and duct tape and stuff.
Not that stuff. They had a pretty high building budget for that.
Okay.
But in theater, it's the illusion of a concrete wall.
Okay. So you were talking about you were in Afghanistan and doing that kind of work, and where did you go next in terms of your puppetry? Because you're not doing it as much anymore, right?
Right. We came back here. We did some shows, and then was doing workshops around the state and that kind of thing. And then the past, about 3 years ago, I got disenchanted with the whole thing and sort of stopped.
You said 10 years was enough of that?
Yeah. And I'd never played music before, so I started taking music lessons, piano and clarinet. But I kept building. Now I'm sort of building toys. So.
Just another creative outlet?
It's just fun. I'm using different kinds of woods and making toys that there's no particular reason to have it other than to play with it. So
I mean, it sounds like you've got a real creative impulse that has sort of taken you from one thing to another, maybe kind of an adventurous, like, spirit.
I drifted a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like at 18, I moved to New York and worked on films up there. Then I moved to Pennsylvania. We had a farm we lived off the land and that sort of thing. And so I've drifted a lot until I got here. This is as long as I've ever been any place. It's always been like 2 to 4 years, and then it's time to move on.
Yeah, but you kind of got in with this artistic community here in Anchorage and drama, and you've got some skills, so it just sounds like a pretty nice lifestyle where you can sort of branch out and do stuff that's cool.
Yeah, it's great. You know, the carpenter thing is really the key to this all, because no matter what I'm building with, you still use these same rules to build.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the same, just changing materials, whether you're using steel or wood or fabric. So that's been that particular basic thing has been my best tool.
Mm-hmm. But there's some talent that comes in there as well.
I hope so.
Not every carpenter I've met could do the things you've been doing.
Yeah, and I know a lot of carpenters do things that I could never do, too.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I always say I'm an aspiring carpenter that builds puppets on the side. Because I'm totally fascinated with carpentry. I mean, the way they build things, the types of woods they use, and why they use them. Mm-hmm. I'm a big addict of this old, not this old house, antique road show.
Oh, yeah?
Where these guys break apart, oh, they use this wood for that, and this wood for that, this kind of joint for that. That means it's this. I'm saying,
sort
wow.
of figure out how it was done.
Yeah. So, yeah, the carpentry is fun. It's a mm-hmm. good living, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a really fun conversation. I was right. You are a fascinating person.
Thank you.
So, anything you want to let folks know about that's coming up in your sort of artistic world?
Well, this summer, I'm just going through a process called USA Projects, where it's a funding sort of thing. I'm raising funds to do an installation where I'm going to have all the technical drawings and the conceptual drawings along with the puppets, and so you can sort of see the process uh-huh. that goes through.
So here in Anchorage?
Here in Anchorage, where, right.
Do you know what the site is going to be?
Yet to be determined.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll put it on the website.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Buzz. It's Buzz Schwall has been my guest. He's a carpenter extraordinaire and dramatist and puppeteer. And that's it. My name is Charles Wolforth. That's it for this week on 101. Thanks for being with us.
One-on-One is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. John LaFournais directs and edits the show. Pat Yak is the producer. Camera operators are Travis Gilmore and Josh Edge. Audio engineers are Dave Waldron and Kristen Spack. One-on-One is recorded at Pilati Brothers Cafe at JL Tower. You can watch One-on-One Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on KAKM Channel 7 TV, or listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage. Tune in next week for One-on-One when Charles Wolforth interviews pioneer, Episcopal priest, and aviator Reverend Norm Elliott. This is KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.